So the people of Chile are going to vote on a new constitution. Why do they need a new constitution and what's in it? Let's find out with Professor Robert Funk on The Public Diplomat. Hey, Robert.
Hi, Guy. How are you?
I'm awesome. So last week, the Constitutional Assembly hands over a draft of the new constitution to President Gabriel Boric, right? Did I pronounce it correctly?
You did.
Okay, awesome. And there's going to be a national vote on this new constitution, September the 4th. Why does Chile need a new constitution?
So this current constitutional process arises from some protests that you might have read about that Chile went through at the end of 2019, where people took to the streets to protest, presumably the rise in the price of the metro fare in Santiago. But very quickly, those protests became a broader thing, very similar to the Arab Spring or something like that, where people were protesting against high prices, the quality of public services, the quality of healthcare, education, and so on. And they were quite violent protests at times with looting and arson and things like that. And it was very hard for the government to get a handle on it. And after about a month of those protests, the entire political class came together and said, we need to channel this rage into some sort of institutional political process, because otherwise we're just, you know, gonna have real problems. And they agreed to a constitutional process, which would begin by first a referendum on whether Chileans wanted or not this constitutional process, then electing the members of the Constituent Assembly. Then that assembly would put together a constitution, and there would be a referendum at the end to approve or not the constitution, which is the referendum you're talking about on September 4th. Going back further, however, the context of all of this is that the existing Chilean constitution was written and imposed during a military dictatorship, which we had in Chile between 1973 and 1990. The constitution was imposed in 1980. It was put together, obviously, with the intention of institutionalizing the dictatorship, of legalizing the dictatorship. But it also, it has to be said, the constitution provided a pathway towards redemocratization, which is what eventually happened in 1980, between 1988 and 1990. That constitution was also has been changed hundreds of times. So many people might hear people saying, well, you know, we're against the Pinochet's constitution or the constitution of 1980. The reality is, this is no longer that constitution. It's really been changed so much that some of the more egregious authoritarian elements of that constitution were eliminated long ago. Still, it's seen as illegitimate because it was imposed by the dictatorship. And that's how we got to where we are.
Okay, cool. So let's talk about some of the meat and potatoes of the new constitution. What are some of the main elements that are now in this new draft?
Well, you know, I gave an interview in The Economist some time ago, and I said this will be the world's first woke constitution, because really the underlying concepts that you can find throughout the constitution are things that are very much are things that kind of matter to especially younger people, sort of the existential concerns of younger people. So it's the environment, it's feminism, it's gender equality, it's identity, it's indigenous rights. It's all these things which are kind of, you know, second, third generation rights. So that's a really interesting thing to observe, right? Because, you know, Chile is a country that historically has been quite conservative, historically has been quite poor. And now we've drafted this constitution that really is at the forefront of the kinds of concerns and rights that we see in other parts of the world, including the developed world. So that's one side of it. Very much a strong focus on, you know, gender parity in the entire public sphere, the public service, indigenous rights, indigenous recognition, indigenous consultation and consent on any decisions that affect their lands. This has been an issue that has raised some eyebrows, because it's not quite sure what we mean by their lands or what consent means. Do they, for example, would they have a veto on investment, mining, forestry. So that's an issue. The environment, you know, everything has to be, every decision has to take into account the fact that, you know, global warming and the fact that we need to worry about the environment. So that's there. And then there's a long list of social and political rights that are very clearly enunciated: healthcare, education, pensions, housing. These are things that, to a greater or lesser degree, exist in Chile, right? Chile has much more than the United States. Chile has a universal healthcare system, for example. Not very good, but we have a universal healthcare system, public healthcare system. but we also have something called, and this comes from the 1980 Constitution, something called the subsidiary state. And the subsidiary state is basically the idea that the state should not get involved or offer goods or services that the private sector can offer. And what that means is that in things like healthcare, pensions, and education, we have a very strong private sector involvement. And whatever kind of the private sector can't do or cannot reach, then that's covered by the public system. So the public system tends to be, it's kind of the opposite of what you often see in Europe, right? Where you have a very strong public sector, and then you might have a top up with private pensions, private healthcare, and so on. Here it's the other way around. So the idea is to move away from that and to move towards a more universal kind of welfare state type model.
So let me interrupt you for a second. Chile has always been one of the leading economies in South America. I mean, when you think about a strong market system, you think about Chile, you know, with its various industries from wine to tourism to, commodities and so forth. Can you please contextualize this move to the left in Chile in relation to recent developments in places like Colombia, Mexico, Bolivia, Argentina, where we've seen voters move to the left?
So, I mean, there's several points there. One is that Chile became over the last 30, 40 years a country that has a strong economy and very market oriented and so on. Huge strides in reducing poverty. But historically, if you go further back, for much of the 20th century, Chile really was a fairly poor country, high levels of inflation, not a particularly strong economy, not a leading country in Latin America in most ways, except for one, which is that Chile has always, from the beginning of the Republic and the beginning of the 19th century, Chile has always had very strong political institutions. So Chile worked. Compared to most other countries in Latin America, things in Chile worked well. And that continues to be the case. So even with all the problems that we have now, protests, questioning, and move to the left and all of that, you know, the Internal Revenue Service works really well. It's very easy to use. Roads and public services, for the most part, work very well. So that's one point. But it's not necessarily, we haven't necessarily always been kind of this rich, developed country. And also, we haven't always been kind of market-oriented. That's something that was pretty much imposed during the dictatorship by the 1980 Constitution. And it was more or less maintained over the course of the democratic transition in the 1990s and 2000s. And that has worked, as I said, to reduce things like poverty, economic growth, industries like wine, and attract foreign investment for industries like wine and mining. But the downside of that, like in most cases where you have these kinds of economies, is that we weren't really able to, we had a slight decrease in inequality, but not much. And we weren't able to provide as the middle class grew and as expectations grew, we weren't able to live up to those expectations in terms of healthcare, education, and so on. So I don't know that we've moved to the left that much. I think what's happened is quite the contrary. I think what's happened is that people have internalized the benefits of the market and they say, why don't I get my share? Why don't I have access to the kind of healthcare, education, pensions that rich people have? And the issue of pensions is a really good example. So Chile was a pioneer in the privatization of pensions, right? We have a private pension system where every worker by law has a, I think it's 10% of their income, put into a private pension fund, which then is invested by these pension funds. And at, when you retire, whatever pot you have in there, you have access to. Well, the system was designed actually for two purposes. On the one hand, to provide pensions. This happened in the early 80s. To provide pensions, but on the other hand, to provide a domestic capital market, to create a domestic capital market. It was really good at creating a domestic capital market, but it was really bad at providing decent pensions. Because what happens? It assumed, first of all, when it was designed, the lifespan in Chile was like 60, 65, and today it's 80. So we're retired we want to retire at the same age, but we live longer. Secondly, often people are employed, especially in a country like Chile, in the informal sector, where you don't have an employer that's paying that 10%. So unless you pay that in yourself, it's not going to be saved. People don't make enough money. For the most part, income in Chile is very low. The average household income is maybe, at today's exchange rate, it could be $500-$600. So so people don't make enough money to save enough to have these decent pensions. So that's where you see that the design of many of these things that was done in the past simply is not enough for the way that people live today. And that's why we have the people protesting and asking for change.
Okay. So the constitutional referendum, as we said, coming up in September. First of all, what are the current public opinion polls suggesting will happen? Will the referendum pass? A. And the second question is, what will it mean for Chile and its political identity?
So it's really interesting because I mentioned that we had a referendum going into the process to ask if Chileans wanted to have a constitutional process. 80%, 79, I think, percent of people who voted said yes, they wanted a constitutional process. Now that 79% of most people who voted, half of the eligible voters did not vote, but still, 80% said they wanted a new constitution. Then we elected the representatives to the Constitutional Assembly. And we elected representatives who were really kind of, you talked about the shift to the left. We elected representatives who really were much more to the left than the average kind of Chilean voter or where Chilean politics tends to be. And so they designed this constitution that I mentioned earlier that has, is really worried about, these things that quite often the left today is worried about. And throughout that process, I think what happened was that people looked at this and said, well, is this really what we were protesting for? Is this what we were asking for? So the issue of, I mentioned the controversy about the possible veto that indigenous groups might have on future investments and things like that. The emphasis on sort of gender diversity and sexual diversity, which I think most, these are really important things. And these are things that are being discussed in the whole world. But, you go to rural Chile and people will say, well, what are we talking about? Why are we talking about,
So in other words, people were protesting economics and they got social issues.
Right. And as a result, what we've seen over the last 3 months is that the polls show that right now and over the last 3 months, people are in favor, the majority of people or a plurality of people are in favor of rejecting this constitutional proposal. And that's really a surprise, right? Because after everything we've been through and protests and violence and a constitutional process and referendums and everything, this thing might actually fall apart.
Right. And what do you think that would mean for Chile if it does fall apart? Is it going to advance more protest or is it going to shift the main street a little bit to the right?
I think no. I think that I don't know if the street will go to the right or not. I think it should definitely. I think there will be protests. I think a lot of people will be disappointed. Remember that the constitutional process was intended and succeeded into a large measure in channeling public frustration, anger, the stuff that we saw in the streets at the end of 2019, channeling all that towards a political process. If that political process doesn't end up producing what people were hoping for, then there's going to be disappointment and maybe a return to violence and protest. I think that violence and protest will be limited. I don't think it'll last, a long time or be as violent as it was last time. I don't know. much will depend on what the political class, how the political class responds, because here's another point that we have not mentioned. The law that set up this whole process states that if the Constitution is rejected in the September 4th referendum, then the existing Constitution remains in place. That was designed pretty much as a kind of incentive to make the Constitutional Convention members produce something that would be palatable to the majority of the people. But apparently it didn't do quite that. So there's a lot of talk now about what comes next. Well, do we go back to the 1980 Constitution and pretend that nothing happened? Or do we come up with a plan B? And that's where we are today. You know, if the political class on the evening of September 4th, should the Constitution be rejected, if the political class manages to stand up and say, okay, we're going back to work, we're tomorrow morning or tonight, we're going to sit down, we're going to come figure out a plan B so that we can come up with something better, then that will help a lot. If the right, for example, which has always been kind of reticent to this whole process, says, well, this was the law said the 1980 Constitution remains in place and that's it, sorry, you lost, then I think that would be more troubling and we would have more conflict. So okay. We don't know. You know, either way, there's a lot of uncertainty in the horizon, because if it's approved, then, as I mentioned earlier, there's a lot of uncertainty about the political system it sets up, about the economic system it sets up, about how much money this is going to cost in terms of providing all these social rights. If it's rejected, then there's uncertainty as to what the path forward might be.
So we are living in the age of politics of the extreme and good old
uncertainty.
And uncertainty and lack of cooperation. Robert, thank you so much for coming in today. I learned a lot and I hope our viewers did as well. We're going to watch, keep an eye out on the referendum and only hope for peace and stability and good things for the country of Chile. Thank you very much for coming in today. Have a great day.
Bye-bye.